Before we start this episode of CFD's Podcast for Good, let's give a little shout out to our presenting sponsor, WSECU. WSECU has been a part of the community since 1957 and has been supporting the CFD in a big way since 2011. Thanks to them, we were able to bring you spectacular events and promotions like the Masquerade Ball, Golf for Veterans Tournament, and our incredible First Week to Give, which has been responsible for raising tens of thousands of dollars in donations to charities throughout our community. For more on how WSECU serves charities throughout our community, visit www.wsecu.org/community. And of course, visit our website to find out more about our incredible partnership with WSECU. And now, here's the show. I'm frustrated.
Oh.
Because this was Michael's chance.
Michael, where are you?
This was your shot.
Yeah, that is true.
This was your shot, Michael.
But you know what?
To
Michael,
step up.
His greatness came after he was over 18.
True.
Right? Right. So right. He was an adult.
Cut from the high school basketball team.
Mm-hmm.
And then came back like nobody's business.
Came back.
Okay, everybody. Welcome to season 2, episode 1 of Podcasts for Good. My name is Philip Kerrigan. I'm the program manager of the Washington State Combined Fund Drive, and my co-host is
Heather Lucas, the fiscal and policy coordinator for the Washington State Combined Fund Drive.
Nailed it in season 2. Look at that. Starting off season 2 with a bang. You remember your title and everything.
1 out of 1.
Yes, they did renew us. Although,
whoever they are,
yeah.
We didn't need their approval.
Right. We just did it anyway. So it doesn't
really
matter. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Today, the very first podcast out of the gate is youth sports.
Yeah.
So chances are some of the folks who listen to these podcasts have kids of their own, maybe even little kids. So this is the season where families are going to do a bunch of summer soccer and summer baseball and signing up for all these different sports.
Yeah.
We had two different charities come in and actually talk about soccer. So this actually should just be called the Soccer Podcast.
Soccer Podcast.
Right,
yeah.
Right. We decided to still stick with youth sports. The Washington Youth Soccer Foundation, Executive Director Hillary Beeler, and then Soccer Without Borders, the director, Lindsay Whitford. They were both here and talked a little bit about what their organizations do and then how soccer kind of helps connect with kids.
Yeah.
That was pretty neat.
Yeah.
I, of course, am a sports guy.
What?
Yeah. I do love it a lot.
Oh,
I see the power.
I didn't know that about you.
I know. Yeah, I wear it like a tattoo.
Do you want to talk about Michael Jordan some more?
No. Michael knows how I feel now that he's missed this podcast. This was his opportunity, as I said.
Yeah, well, he's busy.
Whatever. Busy doing what? Owning the worst basketball franchise in the NBA? Yeah, good job, Michael. Hot take.
I like it coming out of here. Yeah.
He's
going to have to come on and defend himself at some
point. I know, right?
I'm just
blasting him.
You are.
So one thing I will say about sports that I really dig more than anything is the teaching you how to win and lose.
Winning is great.
Well, unfortunately, I didn't do a lot of that when I was playing high school sports. So
you can lie.
Yeah, I could. I was a big time winner. It was just this trick knee that gave out, and I would have been in the NBA.
Oh.
No, not at all. Not even close. But one of the things that I like about sports is always the notion that it goes far beyond, like, just the field. So there's all about learning how to win properly and how to lose properly.
Mm-hmm.
Learning that, you know, most of the time when you put in work and you outwork another person, you will probably win,
mm-hmm.
But there'll still be times when you'll work harder than anyone and somebody will still have talent. And so this idea of like, this is how life goes, you know?
Yeah, you can put in all the hard work you want and not get that result.
Sometimes there will be people who you felt like maybe didn't put in the same amount of work,
mm-hmm.
and they're getting opportunities or they're winning.
Yeah.
And it just teaches you how to do all of those things well and then interact with other people interact with people of different races, different economic backgrounds. I think that's really important.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, I think part of the reason why sports is always so good at that whole notion of like we all come together,
mm-hmm.
And it, you know, crosses the whole racial and economic lines, is because like when you get on a team, the ultimate point is to win. It's yeah. for your team to
your
win.
Your team has a goal. It's the same goal for everybody.
Yeah. And so if you have fractured relationships on the team,
mm-hmm.
then you're never going to win.
Yeah.
And that's also pretty cool, too. Also, youth sports is just so good at that. They do such a better job of, like, helping our kids understand that you're going to be around people that don't look like you or don't talk like you. And then these kids are so much better at accepting that reality than it seems like most of our adults are in this day and age.
Yeah, we're supposed to be grown up enough to just be like, hey,
yeah.
you're a person.
Right,
okay.
Right. Let's I feel like I actually take a cue from the kids, yeah. honestly, on that one.
Yeah. Well, there's probably a lot of cues from kids that we should be taking,
yeah.
honestly.
Yeah. So this was really interesting. We sat down with both of these two. And what I also found interesting is how they come at it from two totally different angles. Soccer Without Borders is actually about newcomer refugees, newcomer immigrants,
yeah.
Kids who are new to this area. And then the Washington Youth Soccer Foundation is more about just anybody and everybody established soccer leagues. That was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I dig it.
But before we get into this,
yes,
hit me with the question of the pod.
All right. So, Philip Kerrigan.
Yes.
If you, right now,
mm-hmm.
could play a no-pressure-to-win sport
mm-hmm.
in an adult league, what sport would you play?
No pressure to win.
Yeah, no pressure to win. And it doesn't have to be like a legitimate, you know, like.
Sure.
Quidditch is an opportunity.
No, I'm not into Quidditch.
No? You don't want to fly around on
a
broom?
It would be all right to be in Quidditch because it would be interesting to fly around on a broom.
Yeah.
I would have to say there's two. So the first is basketball because I love basketball. And
even with that trick knee?
Even with the trick knee, I'll throw a brace on it in the adult league.
Fine.
Here's the problem, though,
yeah.
with the adult leagues.
Yeah.
Okay. The problem with the adult leagues is even if it's an adult league, most of these people are in better shape than me. So I'm already run off the floor to begin with.
Okay.
So I would probably then venture to say the standard, like, old man fallback, which is softball.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, you can bring beer to it.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah.
You know, and then there's no, I mean, there's some pressure to win on some teams. Don't play on those teams.
Don't play on those teams.
You should
not
play on teams that where it's just fun and you're out there BSing.
Yeah.
And then you go to a bar afterwards.
Yeah.
That is fun.
Yeah. I played on a softball league that was a no pressure to win. And then we were apparently good enough to get mm-hmm. moved into the next bracket, and that just destroyed
and
us.
Yeah, and then
that
that's
destroyed
it.
Us.
That's
yeah.
it. No, I'm not into this. You know, and that's another thing about these softball leagues. So
I like that you're pointing, like, you've got a point to make.
Listen to me. I feel a little bit now like I'm on sports radio.
What do you got, Dan Patrick?
Yeah. So they've got this state agency softball league where there's multiple tiers just like that, right?
Yeah.
I not to ostracize any listeners.
Sure.
But I always, you can always tell the guy or the girl
yeah.
who like really thinks that like they were really like one step away from making it.
Mm.
And so they're like way too competitive for this particular league.
Yeah.
Right. And they're like yelling and screaming and they're all intense. And you're like, dude, what are you doing? And then there's always,
I'm going
like,
to go home and eat pizza after this. Like, it's not a big deal.
Right. And then there's always some guy who's like Superman out there, and he's always the most chill
because
he knows he's like light years better than everybody else. And and like, it's always to me, the guy who like thinks that he's really good
is not,
and he's
the best.
Not the best, you know? And he's out there like, come on, let's do this. Oh! And you're like, whatever.
Yeah. Man. And the guy who's pretty quiet, you're just like, I think he ran all of the bases in 0.3 seconds.
Yeah.
I
like there's
understand.
A guy.
Why
like,
are you superhuman?
It's so funny. Cause there'll always be one guy who just like annihilates the softball.
Oh yeah.
And he's always the quietest one. Kinda, you know, it's just awesome.
Yeah, you have to tell all the outfielders, you know what, just chill.
Yeah, just, you know what, don't even turn around when he hits the ball.
Yeah.
It's already gone.
Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah.
Somebody throw it back.
What about you? No pressure to win sport in an adult league, what would you play?
Well, if I, like, of course, fitness and skill.
Okay.
I mean, if we're just like, meh, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I mean, I would love to play soccer and I would love to play basketball.
Okay.
But yeah, I would have to fall back on, you know, old man things and I say know. Softball because my body type and fitness level is more for softball.
Conducive to softball that you can have beer at.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm all about that.
Yeah.
I mean, keep doing that and I'll keep showing up to your softball games.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
So enough from the unfit Sports Center corner. We're actually going to toss it to the two interviews. The first interview is with Executive Director Hillary Beeler of the Washington Youth Soccer Foundation. Here's our interview with her. Okay. So we are here with the Executive Director of the Washington Youth Soccer Foundation, Hillary Beeler. Hillary, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So first and foremost, why don't you tell us a little bit of the history behind the Washington Youth Soccer Foundation and what you guys do for the community?
Absolutely. We are a foundation that focuses on creating equitable access to soccer in Washington State. We were established by Washington Youth Soccer, which is the state youth soccer association that governs most of the soccer clubs in the state. And we had been running at the state association a program called Soccer for Success. That's a free after-school program that uses soccer as a tool to teach kids about nutrition and healthy choices and provide mentorship in low-income communities. And we had run that program for a number of years under Washington Youth Soccer, and then on their way to the 50th anniversary in 2016, we decided that the need was greater than ever for programming like this. And so we decided to start a foundation to celebrate our 50th anniversary as a state association. And the foundation was created. The other focus point of what we do as a foundation is creating safe physical spaces to play. And that entails, in this instance, creating mini pitches. We're turning underutilized concrete spaces like basketball courts into sport court materials so you can play soccer and basketball on it, and really create free spaces where families do not have to pay to rent any fields to be able to play soccer.
Right. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So, quick question. Are you a former soccer player?
I am.
Okay.
Actually, from a very athletic family. Yeah. My mom is actually probably the craziest sports person. I think she's the biggest Sounders fan that I know.
Nice.
Wow.
But she came through high school before Title IX, so she was never able to play school sports at all.
Right.
And so I think part of that love for athleticism really translated into making sure her kids were able to play. And so... my brother played soccer in high school, but there was a period of time where we just didn't have very much money. And so I had wanted to play soccer because I saw my brother on the field and I just idolized him. And I didn't ask to play because I knew, you know, maybe we didn't have the money and I didn't want to make my mom feel bad. And so I didn't ask. And then we ended up moving from Olympia to Port Angeles, Washington. And I was like, okay, now is my chance to play soccer. So I didn't start playing until U12, so sixth grade.
Yeah.
But I fell in love with it. So I'm not good at it, but I love it. I love it so much.
Yeah,
I don't like running, but I will chase a ball for 90 minutes just fine.
Yeah, nice.
And so I've been playing recreationally. I just took the last two seasons off, but I've been playing pretty much 20 years straight recreationally.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's a game you can play for life. I mean, there are, you know, over 60 leagues up in the Seattle metro area. There's absolutely a way for everybody to play soccer.
Awesome. Go ahead.
Well, what kind of lessons, like you talk a little bit about being a kid and, you know, getting to play. So what kind of lessons could a child get out of playing a youth sport?
Absolutely. Youth sports is... you know, there's the fun aspect, there's a socialization aspect, but it's really a great tool for youth development because it's a really safe environment for kids to make mistakes, learn how to deal with loss, learn how to deal with winning, communication, teamwork, you know, working with kids from other backgrounds that are different from you, learning how to listen to a different authority figure.
Right.
And that's just on top of the health benefits of physical activity.
Yeah.
And the CDC recommends 60 minutes, a minimum of 60 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical activity per day for elementary school age children.
Right.
Only about 20% of kids in the state meet that number.
Wow.
And that's, you know, King County has the highest rate, and I think it's, you know, 19% as a county.
Oh,
so
wow.
Almost. That 20.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a you know, we have an intergenerational health crisis that started being noticed with childhood obesity back in the 90s and in early 2000s. And, you know, the research shows that the impact on your mental and physical health from playing sports is immense. The impact on your academic success, on, you know, family connectedness, a lot of these other things. And so we're a soccer organization, but we always tell people soccer is just the tool that we use to create social change. And so we really want to create opportunities for kids to be able to develop through sports in communities where that financial access or the transportation access or language access are the barriers.
Right. What do you think youth sports programs receive enough support in public schools? Because that's a big one right now. I mean, the biggest, the biggest one, it's my, always my problem, is you notice that one of the first things that gets cut is always the school program, or the cost gets transferred to the parents, to such a degree that any parent who's on the edge is just not going to be able to afford it. Do you notice that?
Yeah, we, it's interesting you say that. I just saw an article yesterday saying that, I think it was something like 40% of Americans could not afford an emergency expense of $400 or more.
Wow.
And, you know, I thought about it in soccer terms because we're soccer people, and I just thought, you know, you have a scenario where what if your car breaks down and that's your main mode of transportation? The same day your kid comes home from school with a tryout flyer for sports and says, Mom, I really want to try out for this, and it's a select program. Your choice is potentially between your child being able to do something that is healthy and positive and active, or fixing your car so you can go to work. And I know for parents, it's a real struggle. You know, when I was in high school, which I hate to admit, it was a lot longer ago than I remember, we were just starting to see pay-to-play in the high school sports. And, you know, I think a number of, especially, you know, we have a lot of rural communities that are really affected by that because they're not, there are not as many economic opportunities. And so, you know, that $75 to pay, you know, to play high school basketball, that might be your week's grocery budget.
That's right.
So it, it is a really big issue. That's part of why we also really wanted to form the foundation, is that we offer this programming for free. We are not part of the pay-to-play system. And there's, you know, nothing wrong with the pay-to-play system except for the fact that we know these economic gaps are widening in a lot of our communities in the state. And that should not be the reason the kids don't get to play.
Well, and I think you see the rise of like these select leagues, almost convincing parents that their children are like going to be these super athletes. So they pour all this money into this kid when they really could have been focusing in other areas. It's really cool to have places where you can still play for free. Or at least, you know, at a reduced rate.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, when ESPN has crunched the numbers in the past, something like only I think it's 1.5% of high school girls that play soccer go on to play in college.
Right.
It's like 0.5% for boys.
So
I always tell parents when they talk about, you know, the investments, because and I see it, it's an investment in their children. I tell them, if you spent the money on tutoring and test prep as opposed to trying to achieve scholarships through sports, when, you know, the Ivy League does not give athletic scholarships.
That's right.
Academic, and if you happen to have athletic skills, then that puts you up. I tell them, you know, if you invested that in preparing your child for college, that's probably a better investment for
what
you want.
I
think it's hard, you know, we, especially when you're crazy soccer fans, and let me tell you, soccer people are crazy. I know every sport says
that. I think I can see that.
We're pretty bonkers. but we're just so passionate about it because it's this, you know, universal language that connects so many different types of people that it's hard not to get swept up in it. But, you know, I think sometimes our parents really need to realize that we're putting pressure on these kids when they should be there for fun. They should be there to make friends. They should be there to learn skills, to practice. And so starting to throw at these early ages the tryouts and talking about making it to an academy team and some of these other things, you know, it's not really realistic for a lot of the kids, but also that's not necessarily what's best for a lot of the kids.
That's exactly right.
When the, you know, the data is really showing, the Aspen Institute and a lot of the kind of national youth sport organizations have been participating in some studies the last couple of years called State of Play. And when they put the numbers together, you know, the drop-off rates for youth sports are happening as early as age 10, age 12. You know, that's elementary school. So we have created this stressful environment in youth sports, which should be a place to be free to play. And I do think that is really hurting our ability to provide those opportunities.
They focus far too often on the competitiveness right away. And it's turning kids off from the sports, I think, which is unfortunate.
It is.
So what barriers do you think prevent a child from engaging in team sports?
I think a big one is knowing what opportunities are out there.
Yeah.
It can be really hard. I know it sounds kind of crazy in the day of Google where you should be able to just, you know, look everything right. up, but it can be hard to find the right information of who offers programming in your local community, what's the cost, what's mm-hmm. the commitment, how do you even get signed up, you know, uniforms, all these other things.
Right.
I think, you know, the other piece of that is most of the materials that most sport clubs put out are uh-huh. going to be in English only. And so if you're working in a community where English is not the predominant first language of families, it's already creating a barrier.
Yeah.
Another piece of that is transportation. The original, in soccer specifically, the original youth soccer system in our state was set up in the mid-1960s. Mm-hmm. And it was very suburban oriented, which makes a lot of sense. You know, the families were leaving more urban areas, pushing back out into suburbia. And where can you build soccer fields that are sizable pieces yeah. of real estate? Well,
right.
it's going to be in the suburbs.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you play in, say, Seattle, for example, if you play in the Seattle Recreational League, you are playing all over Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have a car, how are you getting your kid to soccer practice, let alone soccer games?
Right, yeah. right.
So part of the challenge is, especially in these more urban communities or communities that don't necessarily have as much of a park or field infrastructure, it even can become as tough as, well, how close is practice going to be to our house? If it's
yeah.
at our elementary school,
sure.
we can walk to it.
Right.
But if it's across town, well, now we might have some issues. And a number of the communities that we serve, 12 of our 14 program sites are in South King County.
Mm-hmm.
11 of our program sites, sorry. A lot of these communities have a lot of immigrant populations, refugee families, mm-hmm. Families where their, you know, breadwinners are working multiple jobs. And so even just finding that time to transport the kids around can be
right.
a challenge. But I think, you know, really what families, all families want for their kids is for their kids to be happy, for mm-hmm. them to grow up to be the best people that they can be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, one of the things that we also try to do is, when we can, help connect the existing soccer organizations with communities that we know want to play soccer, because it doesn't help if we're all disconnected from
yeah.
each other.
Right. Yeah, totally agree.
So, on topic question, but off topic.
Oh,
perfect.
Oh, an on topic, off topic question.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
I like it. How excited for the World Cup are you?
Oh, well, it's complex.
I know, right?
I know. Well, it's like you kind of want to put your, there's like the men's side hat put on, or there's the women's side.
Yeah.
On the women's side, I'm almost always pumped. The men's side especially, you know, U.S. soccer has some real struggles,
yeah.
and it has some
uh-huh.
things it needs to confront, I think even more so than it's currently doing. Our, you know, U23 team did not
mm-hmm.
qualify for the Olympics,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and we have not qualified for the World Cup.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see. I think, you know, again, soccer is such an international language, though, that you're going to see World Cup enthusiasm all over the state
right.
yeah.
in
right.
different communities, and you're going to see the France jerseys, the Mexico jerseys,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
everything. So I think that'll be interesting. On World Cup side of things, the U.S. Soccer Federation is trying to get the 2026 World Cup. So there's this huge push right now.
So that way we can qualify?
I think that might be part of it.
Yeah,
yeah right.
Yeah.
But part of that, you know, they are hoping to have Seattle as one of the host cities on the list.
Oh,
right?
Cool.
I think Seattle is still in, like, you know, the top 20
yeah.
destinations potentially, even potentially, you know, a whole West Coast corridor. So that would be a huge financial boon to
right.
Washington State.
Right.
And from a soccer perspective, you know, the recreational soccer registrations grew across the country and shot up after the 1999 Women's
yeah.
World Cup.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
Because it was, you know, one of the most watched broadcast events
uh-huh.
of that
yeah,
year.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, we always hope when there are World Cups or Confederation Cups or any of these large competitions that it also is helping to inspire kids to
mm-hmm.
get out there and play.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also, you know, a lot of those types of tournaments, they bring community work with them. So oftentimes they'll, you know, install a soccer field or they'll go out and
yeah.
do clinics and things
yeah.
like that, which would be really cool for kids in
right.
our communities
right.
that we get to serve, as well as a lot of other communities in
yep.
Washington. And as part of that, we are partnered with the U.S. Soccer Foundation on running
okay.
the Soccer for Success program. And they were established with the revenues from the 1994 World Cup.
Oh, wow.
And
oh,
so
wow.
It was like the first profitable World Cup.
Yeah.
And the organizing committee decided to establish the U.S. Soccer Foundation with that. And so part of their initiative running up to 2026 is their goal is to build 1,000 mini pitches across the country and to have 1 million kids playing in Soccer for Success annually.
Yeah. Did they achieve it?
We're on our way there. Okay. We were able to serve just over 1,000 kids this school year with our program.
Nice.
Excellent.
And so we're one of, you know, at least 33 different communities right now that run the program. So we're trying to support their goals of reaching as many kids as possible. Yeah. And kind of the goal that we have in mind is about 5,500 kids annually as of 2026.
Nice.
Awesome.
And with the support of King County Parks, we were lucky enough to get 2 grants from them recently. And we will be installing 2 mini pitches and 2 elementary schools in Auburn this summer.
Awesome. That's great.
So we're really excited about that we're already trying to, help push that 1,000 fields
right,
forward.
Right. That's great. Yeah. That's great.
So let's say someone hears this podcast and they want to begin giving to Washington Youth Soccer Foundation. Can you talk a little bit about what donations do for your organization?
Absolutely. So the program we provide runs for 2 12-week sessions, a fall session and a spring session, 3 days a week after school for about an hour and a half. And so what we do is we hire coach mentors from the community, whether those are teachers from the school, parents or family members of the kids who enroll. And so, you know, a majority of the program cost is paying the coach mentors to be there 3 days a week to work with the kids.
Sure.
And so the most of the rest of the program consists of, you know, doing family nights where we bring parents versus player scrimmages together and family potlucks and award sessions to give those, you know, end of season parties. And really to provide as much of a traditional team soccer experience as possible for the kids. But a lot of the, you know, a lot of what we're able to do is really efficient compared to just trying to sponsor a single child into a recreational soccer opportunity.
Yeah.
And a lot of communities, you're starting at $100-$150 for recreational soccer registration for one season nowadays.
It's crazy.
Which is crazy. I don't think we ever paid more than like $50 growing up.
I know, it's nuts.
It is nuts. And so we are able to provide 24 weeks of soccer with a healthy snack, mentorship, soccer, and additional tournaments and other jamboree events for about $300 a player per year. And so when you kind of average it out, it's like a couple bucks an hour that we're able to provide this. And the economic support that that also provides families, they don't have to provide daycare for those 3 days a week after school. And parents know how much daycare can cost it can have a really big impact. And so we have 2 full-time staff members that oversee 14 program sites, about 50 coach mentors. We work with 6 different school districts. Mm-hmm. And so really what we're trying to do is support the goals of our partners, like the schools that we work with, and really help propel those kids towards academic success as well as, you know, mental and physical health.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. And do you have any events coming up that you want people to know about?
Oh, that's great. We just held an event this last weekend that was phenomenal. We're also partnered with the Sounders and Rave Foundation.
Cool.
And so we had the Sounders Academy boys come out and host a clinic for our Soccer for Success
kids
at Starfire Sports this past weekend. So we had about 20 boys come out and run little clinic stations with our kids. It was a really cool event. I think the Academy players got a lot out of it. So we just had that this past weekend. Tonight, we actually have 3 end-of-season family nights.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So it's a busy day today.
Yeah.
So we're just wrapping up our season now, but we're starting to work on hopefully doing some soccer tournament fundraisers over the summer and into the fall. So those would be really great opportunities for people who like to play soccer to, you know, play in some small-sided games.
Yep.
We will be starting the Soccer for Success program up again in September.
Yeah.
And so we usually, a couple of times each season, will host jamboree tournaments where you bring multiple schools together in one place and have them have a tournament experience. And we'd love to have people come out and volunteer to be field marshals or just kind of cheer the kids on.
Nice.
Yeah. But really, we are excited about the mini pitches that'll be opening. So hopefully those will be opening in August.
And excellent.
Yeah, we'd love to have employees come and enjoy the fun. Come out and play with us.
Awesome. Right on. Thank you. Well, Hillary, thank you very much for being on the podcast. We really appreciate you coming by.
Thank you so much.
And that was Executive Director Hillary Beeler talking a little bit about Washington Youth Soccer Foundation and what they do for the community, specifically in King and South King County. The next charity is actually located kind of roughly in that area as well, but they have a very unique tilt to what they do, and that is Soccer Without Borders. Here is Director Lindsay Whitford talking about her organization. So here we are with the director of Soccer Without Borders, Lindsay Whitford. Thank you. Did I pronounce that right?
First you got it right. Yes.
Lindsay, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. So can you tell us a little bit about the history of your organization and what it does for the community?
Absolutely. Soccer Without Borders in Seattle and the greater King County area is brand new. We just established in October 2017 and opened our first year-round program in March 2018. We're part of a larger nonprofit, Soccer Without Borders, that has now 5 programs in the U.S. and 2 internationally.
Okay.
So the site here, it's our first in the Pacific Northwest, and is a new expansion site of the larger organization that uses soccer as a vehicle for positive change in the lives of, in the U.S., newcomer youth, so immigrant, refugee, and asylee youth.
Okay, and where are you guys located primarily?
Our first program is at the Seattle World School that is in the Central District of Seattle. Mm-hmm. It's a alternative middle and high school of the Seattle Public Schools. Mm-hmm. So kids that are first arriving to the U.S. and new to English language, new to the school system, that's where many of them get sent. And in addition to that, we'll be doing some programming in Kent this summer.
Okay.
Nice.
So are the primary folks who you cater to, English is their second language, I'm assuming?
At least their second language.
Really?
So a lot of the kids have, 3 or 4 languages that they speak based on their country of origin and their pathway to the U.S. But they're all learning English.
And you're able to find people to connect with them that can teach them in their language that they understand?
A lot of what we do, and I think the power of using soccer as the tool to bring kids together, is that you can do a lot of soccer play through demonstration and through physical expression. And soccer is a universal language that brings kids together.
Yeah.
So that's one side of it.
Okay.
And then another side of it is we try to build a lot of bridges between the soccer field and the classroom.
Yeah.
So we actually do as much as possible to maximize opportunities for kids to speak English, listen to English, and kind of practice what they're learning in the classroom on the soccer field.
Awesome.
In a space that might be a little bit more comfortable for kids to try something. And if it doesn't go exactly as planned, it's okay, and try again.
Yeah.
So all of our coaching and all of our sessions with kids themselves are conducted in English. And a rule of the program is actually to practice English.
Okay, yeah.
That being said, coaches are bilingual, bicultural, and are able to connect with kids often in their first language. But we try to use the space to accelerate acquisition that's happening in the classroom.
Awesome.
Nice.
Awesome.
And were you a soccer player growing up?
I was. Yeah, I grew up in Seattle. I actually just recently relocated back to Seattle for this work. But grew up playing at school and in club, played for high school, played for college down in Portland, Oregon.
Nice.
And have continued to play in my adult life. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So what kind of skills do you think that soccer specifically, but team sports, really build, and specifically with the sort of kids you're dealing with who are also at the same time dealing with integrating themselves into what I've got to assume is a newer situation?
Absolutely. A lot is the community that is built on a team. That anyone that's ever played any sport or been on any part of a team, really doesn't have to be sport specific, can relate to, is that when you join a team, you have automatic membership and automatic almost feeling of family, of someone that has your back. And in the same ways that we try to maximize opportunities for English speaking, our coaches are also trained in maximizing opportunities to grow connections between themselves and youth participants, and also between the youth participants on the field.
Yeah.
To break down barriers that might exist between different countries or language groups that are on our team, and build really lasting friendships. And in that way, we also can create a culture where it's the kids themselves manage that it's cool to opt into a space where we all welcome each other and mm-hmm. where we want to be friends across language and across mm-hmm. culture. So I think that the social capital yeah, of it yeah, element, yeah. that's quite the
right.
The word that I use, like immigrant or whatnot, but that goes a long way.
Right.
And feeling connected to the larger community. Right. A lot of what we do is getting kids involved. Our teams play in recreational leagues mm-hmm. and throughout the cities that we operate in, and that's a great way to connect to the larger community itself. Outside of the team building space, there's mm-hmm. Sport is a natural place to practice leadership skills, either through formal positions for kids to be captains, less formal positions of just speaking up in front of a group during yeah. that day can be a really huge thing for
yeah,
a kid.
Yeah, that's right.
There's a lot of opportunity to, again, practice things and fail and try again. Mm-hmm. And the competition that exists in sport
yeah.
is a great way to practice high stakes in a safe environment.
Yep.
And then be able to turn that on and turn that off and return to life and see then can you apply those experiences to something that's happening in school or something mm-hmm. that's happening outside of school.
Yeah. Nice. Well, and what I really like is you're getting to them, I think, at the right age, because it seems like kids nail it more than adults do sometimes.
Yeah.
Like they are willing to participate with somebody who might be different than them. They're willing to yeah. accept it a little bit easier than adults are.
Kids can be more malleable. Yeah, it's true. But the bulk of our programming is directed at kids that are in middle school and high school.
Yeah.
And nationally, actually, by age 13, 70% of kids drop out of sport for a variety of reasons.
We've heard that. We just heard that stat. Yeah, that's crazy to me.
There's some consistency across your podcast people today. That's good.
We have a consistent message today, yeah. folks.
So I think kids can be more... certainly more open, but it's also mm-hmm. a critical age in when kids opt to drop out of sport for a variety of reasons.
Right.
And that's even more impactful for newcomer youth where they're often a high risk population mm-hmm. and playing in sport requires so many resources and access that they're at the top of the list of kids that might not be able to access
that's
sport
right.
yeah. without yep. many programs like
that's
SWB
right.
as well.
Yep, that's right. Yeah.
So can you talk about what success looks like for a child who participates in a youth sport?
Absolutely. And I'll zero in on Soccer Without Borders just because it's what I know
yeah,
best.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think for us, the soccer field is the hook in it, what is often gets kids involved in the vehicle for what we do, but it's not the deliverable. The hope that we have for kids that participate in our program in the U.S. is that they're able to graduate from high school and uh-huh. have the skills that they need to find success in their lives after graduation. And that could be a variety of things, but so that they feel mm-hmm. equipped to meaningfully connect and
yeah.
be a part and contribute to their community.
Yes. Right, right.
So we, as an organization, measure outcomes in terms of social capital, how connected do kids feel to mm-hmm. their community and to Soccer Without Borders and to their coaches. Do they have a mentor within the program? We track healthy lifestyles. Mm-hmm. Are they making good decisions for themselves mm-hmm. and also avoiding risky decision making? We track language development and academic outcomes mm-hmm. and personal development that are more, could be qualified as like soft skills in
sure.
terms
yeah.
of increased confidence and self-efficacy.
Yeah.
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 That's all very niche-y language. but I think one thing that can really capture Soccer Without Borders well is that mm-hmm. When kids are asked to describe what we do in the program, one of the most common words is the kids give is family, and that
cool.
the nice. Program cool. feels like they have a second family and that
yeah.
they have that support network in place, and in the same way that, you know, families often are our support
yeah.
network,
right, right.
go to if you need help for anything
yeah.
And if we're able to do that and create that, then we're situating the kids in such a way that they can progress through
mm-hmm.
those other
mm-hmm.
benchmarks
yeah.
that I laid out.
Yeah.
So I know that you said the Soccer Without Borders in Seattle is pretty new.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, from your experience,
yeah.
like clearly you played soccer and now you are an active person doing a job that's working back in this field.
Yeah.
So do you find that like people that you've worked with, adults, the coach, the mentors, like are they people who grew up with youth sports and they played soccer when they were kids? Like, do you feel like there's a lot of like turnover where people come back and stay with the sport?
Certainly with our volunteer coaches. Uh-huh. So we all of our teams have a paid head coach and then a group of 4 to 5 volunteer coaches that are helping out. Uh-huh. And they're often get connected to the program either because they have a background in soccer and are looking for a way to express that.
Yeah.
Besides playing, or often they come from a newcomer background as well. Uh-huh. And something in their journey has made connecting to SWB feel really important to them. So I think that there, a lot of people do connect to the organization because they have a background in soccer.
Sure.
Or sport in general, and they've seen the impact that it can have personally or larger.
Uh-huh.
But that we also have people connect to the organization that have never played sport before.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's just as important, I think, particularly for our girls' engagement.
Yeah.
Most of the girls that are playing on a Soccer Without Borders team, be it in Seattle or other program sites that we have,
yeah,
they are brand new to sport. Mm-hmm. And often have never played on a formal team, had never had the opportunity to participate in that way. They don't have many role models of women within their families or their mm-hmm. social networks that have played sport. So sometimes some of our best coaches for girls' teams are women that also don't have a background but are willing to try it.
Sure.
And show that it's mm-hmm. okay to try something without knowing what you're doing.
Yeah.
And approaching something new with that curiosity and instinct to just try it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in your experience, is it harder to get girls to participate in youth sports than it is to get boys?
With the population that Soccer Without Borders works with uh-huh. newcomer youth, the immigrant, refugee, asylum youth,
yeah.
it's just completely different.
Okay.
And the power that soccer holds is completely different.
Yeah.
I think with connecting with boys, it's often throwing a ball on mm-hmm. the field and mm-hmm. many people come running.
Right,
At our new program at the Seattle World School, we've only been operating for practices for 2 months, and there's 40 boys from 14 countries that yeah. are on that team.
Yeah.
For girls, it's not that there's not that interest there necessarily, but the pathway to recruit and to get them on the field can look very different.
Uh-huh.
And it can be a more intricate picture of family permission, talking about what it means to be a female athlete and the benefits that are inherent in sport when girls or anyone participates in
right.
sport. Often girls will have household responsibilities tend to be put on girls more often than boys, or they're the first priority of the responsibility being mm-hmm. you know, delegated to.
Yeah.
So just even unpacking what a girl's schedule looks like after school, and can we work towards making sport a priority or a yeah, soccer participation a priority. So it's a much longer runway and requires a lot more
yeah.
time and patience to yeah. get girls onto the field.
That's interesting. I didn't even think about all that. And so now, do you notice, what do you notice in terms of parental participation when it comes to the folks that you have on the teams? Do you notice that since the parents are mainly refugees or immigrants, that they're busy with work? I mean, what do you notice is the parental participation?
Sure. I'll say from the start that because we're a new program in Seattle, we've only been up and running for 2 months, that
yeah.
we're just getting to know the families as well.
Uh-huh.
So I can't speak in...
you don't have
generally.
A huge sample
exactly.
size yet. Yeah.
I have worked for Soccer Without Borders for 8 years now,
uh-huh.
first at our program in Grenada, Nicaragua, and most recently before moving back to Seattle, mm-hmm. was the director of the program that we have in Boston, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think family participation is there a lot of interest in what we do and how we do it and how to connect to the program, but how that manifests for every family is going to be different.
Okay.
Because a lot of families that have youth in our programs have really busy schedules.
Yeah.
They have, you know, a lot going on in the household and also with work schedules, often working
mm-hmm.
What might be seen as like non-traditional hours outside of the 9 to 5,
yeah.
particularly on the weekends as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we, for our part, we do a lot to try to address that and get to know the families to the most extent possible.
Mm-hmm.
Do a lot of house visits for program leadership, be able to to connect with families so that the parents or guardians are familiar with us and know what their kid's involved in and can support in that way. But in terms of being able to come to a lot of games or practices, usually there's quite a few limitations there.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
It's scary, too, for somebody who is new to the country to say, okay, you know, my kid is going out and they're doing this thing. Am I sure that they're safe in this space?
Absolutely. And I think that's why for all of our programs, in Seattle included, partnership, working with the right partners is really important.
Yeah.
And that's why it's really valuable that we have such a major partner with the Seattle World School, that the school itself is already a place where kids
can feel
go
safe
every day. The families are connected to, and we are an extension of that and working in tandem together. If we just, and that was an intentional decision when we opened up programming here in the area, the trust that already exists there is so important. If we just plop down at a random field in Seattle,
who are you?
You're not going to get the same level of trust. Yeah,
exactly. And maybe we could grow it, but it's not going to be there immediately.
Right. Yeah. Right. As if you're attached to a school.
Exactly.
Right.
And we still need to work to grow it as the program and as an extension but unique part of the school community.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it certainly helps in expediting the process of getting up and running.
Yeah. Great.
So let's say someone hears the podcast.
Yeah.
And they want to start giving to Soccer Without Borders. Can you talk a little bit about what donations do for your organization?
They do everything for the organization. Like many all nonprofits, we rely heavily on the support of all sorts of folks, and donations go a really long way. The things that we spend donations on are coaching, transportation, and getting kids involved in gameplay. Coaching, we invest a lot of time and energy in training coaches, not solely on being a soccer coach, but delivering the unique Soccer Without Borders model, that it has a lens towards coaching for youth development, coaching for English language acquisition, and coaching with a trauma-informed lens.
Yeah.
And so we ask a lot of coaches, so need to put a lot of resources towards their training, and ongoing training, so they don't get thrown into the deep end and you are.
Right.
As an organization, think of everything that you need in order to play a sport, and we provide all of that. So there's also a lot of coach time spent in and staff time spent in mobilizing those resources, be it field space or equipment, or transportation, or signing up for a league. That all takes time and translates to coaches time as well. Another thing that we spend a lot of money from donations on is transportation to games themselves. And anyone that plays sport can agree that gameplay is the best part of sport.
Right.
The kids that participate in SWB agree. And from the program leadership perspective, that's it's an opportunity to really draw a meaningful bridge between the classroom and gameplay. And we use games as an incentive for kids to not only participate in the program and contribute meaningfully to the program environment, but also to go to class and to progress in their academics. So being able to safely transport to kids to those games and then actually playing those games are two of our other higher budget items.
Yeah.
And are, the reason why kids stay in the program and why we're able to have some of the academic outcomes that we have seen in our veteran programs, which is that 95% of kids that participate in Soccer Without Borders graduate from high school.
Nice.
Wow.
And that's the same.
Yeah.
The same cohort, the English language learners nationally have 58%.
Holy cow. Seriously.
And that, that comes down to our coaches and gameplay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
You guys are doing something right.
We're hoping to do it here in Seattle, too.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So do you guys have any events or promotions coming up that you want to highlight?
We have a couple things coming up. Outside of the program directly in Seattle, we'll be doing a soccer camp in Kent in partnership with the City of Kent and World Relief from August 13th to 17th.
Nice.
And we're looking for volunteers to get involved in that. It'll be a bigger lift and a five-day long soccer camp. So if people want to get involved as soccer coaches or kind of behind the scenes people, also looking for a lot of equipment for that itself.
Okay.
That is one short-term opportunity for engagement that would go a really long way. Yeah. In early October, if there's any soccer players out there that are listening, we'll have our first Small Goals Big Change soccer tournament that is an adult small-sided soccer tournament. That's structured a lot like a charity 5K where you either donate or ask from your friends, family, coworkers to donate on your behalf in order to play in the tournament.
Cool.
And that will be a way to raise funds for the program as well. Nice. Yeah. And you can also learn more about what we do and connect with some of our volunteers and kids that will be out there along the way. Plus, you can play.
Yeah. So there
are a couple of big events. Generally, because we are so brand new, if you have an idea of how you want to get involved and want to connect, we have some formal pathways for getting volunteers onboarded. But the most important thing for our work right now is growing our community. And that's why I'm excited to be here. And if people are curious to get involved, they should absolutely reach out.
Yeah.
Nice.
Excellent. Awesome. Well, Lindsay, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and telling us a little bit about Soccer Without Borders.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, so that was our interviews with both Hillary and Lindsay. I think they were just both really just a delight to talk to about soccer and just basically their organizations. And you could definitely feel the enthusiasm coming from both of them.
Yeah,
that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, too, where I think meeting them both, I was just like, oh, you definitely have a background in soccer.
Oh,
like,
there's no question.
You came from this world.
I mean, can you not tell the soccer girls as they, like the soccer women as they walk around? It's like,
I feel like, there's an era.
Absolutely.
Like an aura about them.
They're like, first of all, they're like tough as nails, all of them.
Yeah.
And then they're not afraid to talk at all.
Do you want to say something nice about Jerrica right now?
Well, Jerrica's lovely.
And she's a soccer girl.
And she is, not a lot of people know that. She is a soccer girl. Although, how could she possibly, the way she talks on this podcast, she has the confidence of a girl who played soccer. I don't know why that specific sport breeds that confidence. Although, I have to say, so my wife is an extremely confident person.
Yeah.
And she played fast pitch.
Yeah.
All the way up through college.
Mm-hmm.
I think we didn't really get a chance to hit on too much, but I think it's really interesting, right? I mean, I wonder if there are these correlations between
confidence and sports.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
Specifically for females.
Yeah.
Right? Because, you can sense it when you see a female that has played sports before.
Yeah.
They do definitely walk a little bit differently. They interact a little bit differently. There's a confidence there.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I wonder if there's any correlation there.
Yeah. I think that there should be.
Yeah.
Like, do the data on it.
I will. You know what? I'll do that. I'll call up my friends at 538.
Nice.
And we'll run some
Get
data.
Some real facts.
We'll run some data.
Good. I like it. I do have some data, though, not related to confidence.
Oh, great. Well, then I'm not interested.
Whatever. You're going to listen.
Okay.
So so there is no actual, like, you know, like an organization that monitors any kind of youth sports.
Really?
Yeah. There's no like, hey, we're here to make sure that everybody's healthy and doing
Are you kidding
things.
Me? There's no organization that does that?
Are you being sarcastic?
No, I'm serious.
Oh, okay.
Are you serious?
No, like there's
like
no...
there's a federal organization for everything.
Yeah, there's not.
Wow, that's weird.
So, it is a crazy.
I love how you were like, "Are you being sarcastic with me right now?"
Well, I wasn't sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I often can't follow these things
about
people.
That genuinely surprises me. Yeah. We have regulations on all things all the time.
Like, don't get me wrong. Sports? Like, leagues do have, you know, their regulations, their rules, but they're more broken down into localized
sections. Yeah, okay,
And not so much, like, even statewide.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're even smaller
county
than that.
County,
city.
Okay.
Yeah,
makes
even
sense.
Just program. So, according to ESPN, the magazine.
Oh, that's still around? ESPN burn! Oh man, my hot takes are coming today.
Yeah, you were on fire. So, in 2009, $5 billion with a B, billion passed through youth sports leagues.
Oh my God.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot of interest out there for kids, mm-hmm, and clearly, like, it's mm-hmm, a thing that you mm-hmm. know helps build skill.
I think that's a good and bad thing. Yeah. We talked when we talked to Hillary a little bit about the elite leagues.
Yeah,
I think that those are doing they're doing a disservice, in my opinion, to a lot of kids.
Yeah, because you need to be able to access sports.
Well, also I
and
think
be on a team.
Yeah. Also, I think sports is about diversifying. So, yeah. like. Not only in the type of people you meet, but the type of sports you play.
Exactly.
You should be diverse. You should try all sorts of different ones.
Yeah. And if you go to a school, you're going to have experience and with the kids who are at that school.
Mm-hmm.
But when you play sports, you have to have interactions with kids outside your school.
I know.
So then you get like that little chunk, that little taste. Mm-hmm. Who are you? Where do you come from? Okay.
Right.
Now we're playing this sport together.
Right. You get these adults that are addicted to like the glory of like their kid winning.
Oh yeah.
Or the sense of like this is the meal ticket.
Yeah.
And you just shake your head because you're like, you're putting this kid through a ringer. You're creating an unneeded anxiety on this child because this child somehow thinks if I don't make it, my parents are going to be disappointed or whatever. Sports is so totally opposite of what that's mm-hmm. supposed to be about.
Yeah. To quote James Vanderbeek, I don't want your life.
That's right. He, you know what? Lots of lessons in Varsity Blues, people.
I never saw it, but I know that.
What?
Yeah, I didn't see it. I actually went to the drive-in, and they were supposed to play Varsity Blues, but they played the first movie at the Shelton Drive-In back in, like, 1998. Wow. And then they were like, you know what? There's not enough of you here to play this movie, so bye.
What?
So, James Vanderbeek.
Top five.
Sports movies?
High school sports movies.
That's one of them?
Yeah. Nice. Absolutely. I mean, it is so over the top and ridiculous.
Yeah.
John Voight wins the overacting award of a lifetime in that movie. Oh my gosh.
He probably wins that award for a number of his movies,
Scott Kahn's in it.
Yeah.
Obviously. And he just plays what I think is himself.
Okay.
Just like cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Like James Caan's, like, Ritalin-infested
child.
Son. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
So, stats, just a few more.
Yeah.
As far as kids across the country who play in youth sports on a mm-hmm. team, 21.5 million kids.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's a lot.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And of those kids, 75% of boys, 69% of girls aged 8 to 17.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we're at.
Okay.
For
okay.
those kids.
Yeah.
But then also, like, there's this stat about how early a kid could play sports.
Okay.
So, you know, you've got sports leagues for like T-ball and little 3-year-olds and things like that.
We tried when our kid was 4 and it wasn't working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like that kind of focus, like you can't.
Well,
have
you're kind of like I just paid $35 for you to pick dandelions.
In a
that's
field.
That's basically what I did. Yeah.
Don't throw that rock. Don't throw that rock. So the biggest indicator of whether a kid starts young with sports
mm-hmm.
is whether or not their family income is over $100,000.
Wow.
So the younger you are,
the more likely you're going to be to play sports.
Yeah, and
your
parents might be making a lot more money.
Wow. That doesn't seem crazy to me.
No.
I mean, I could definitely see that. Because how's your kid supposed to be able to, you know, access sports if they're 4 years old and you're on a fixed income?
Yeah. They don't.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That's pretty much it.
And that's really interesting. So that was the stats corner. We did everything here. We did what you would do on SportsCenter.
We dove
into the data. Now all we need is Kobe Bryant to come on and do some weird, funky, like, detail-oriented
thing. But also,
thing.
Maybe what we need is for us to argue really loudly because we didn't get that.
That's true. That's true.
I can yell at you if you'd like.
Yeah, please, please.
I'm sure listeners would love it.
I know. Will the Warriors win in 5 or 6?
They're going to win in 3.
That's not possible. That's not possible.
I don't think you understand. This is possible. Have you met Steph Curry?
There you go. And scene. There you go. PTI right there.
Yep, that was actually PTI.
Our version of PTI.
Yeah.
So that was Sports Roundup featuring Heather Lucas and Philip Kerrigan. Want to give you some upcoming events as we close out the podcast. So the first is for those charities actually out there, we still have 3 different slots available for Podcasts for Good. The first is volunteer organizations. The second is my personal favorite, that I hope gets filled at some point, and that is civility in the media.
Yeah.
Hoping that someone steps up for that one.
Maybe and, on that podcast, we won't yell at each other.
Yeah, probably. Okay. We want to keep it. Well, you know what we'll do? We'll do do do's and don'ts.
Ah.
We'll yell at each other.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
good.
and then that'll be a That's don't exciting. Do it this way. And then World AIDS Day in December. We'd really love to. We know there are a ton of organizations that deal with HIV and AIDS in the program. Please, one of you. Reach out to us, and we'd love to have you on the podcast.
Absolutely.
We just finished up the leadership breakfast on May 17th. Thank you to the 500 of our closest friends who came out and had breakfast with us.
Yeah.
Hopefully, you got inspired. We really enjoyed. We really enjoyed that event, and we will from there parlay that into campaign leader trainings, which start on June 6th. And you know, we'll just start the process from there.
Yeah,
so hopefully we'll see some campaign leaders in June. And then we also did a really neat thing on Memorial Day, where we went out to the Vietnam Veterans Memorial on the Capitol grounds, and basically passed out muffins and coffee to a bunch of the different Vietnam veterans and their families who were there to recognize fallen friends and family as a result of Vietnam. Pretty cool. I really enjoyed that one a lot. And it was funny because this is something that we've done now for 3 years. And the first time we did it, I thought these guys are, because they're like Harley Davidson tough guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, here they are going to drive down and they're like
all their leather.
Black leather and like smoking bikes and all that sort of, all that sort of stuff. And then they're going to walk up and I'm going to be like, muffin? But actually they took to it quite a bit, so it was pretty cool.
Hey, muffins are delicious.
They are. You can't really I don't care who you are and how tough you are, the chocolate on chocolate muffin at Costco, you're gonna eat it.
Well, maybe muffins are like you sports.
Bring people together.
They bring people together.
Wow. Look at that. Look at how you circled all that back together.
Yep.
So that was the podcast on youth sports. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And maybe I'll take you out with my best broadcaster voice. So thanks to everybody for taking a listen to the show today. We'll see you next time. Is that good?
That was great.
Yeah.
Good job.